everyone, and welcome to the Transform Your Confidence Show. This is a show about holistic leadership and advocacy, and I'm your host, Raj Gurn. Here's a bit about me. I'm a longtime serial entrepreneur who specializes in mindset, branding, media, communications, and marketing, and I firmly believe that great leadership and advocacy is predicated on the mission that everyone must benefit across the entire food chain. I'm an award-winning C-suite entrepreneur who has worked in the media and event space for the past 20 years with many Fortune 500, celebrity, and thought leader clients from around the world. At this point in my life, I seek to share my many insights and resources with anyone who wants to learn about holistic leadership and advocacy in a newly launched online community at the openchestconfidenceacademy.com, where I've mandated my entire organization to provide products and services that center around knowledge, action, and accountability. My goal with this show is to pull back the curtain, I mean way back, to bring you insider knowledge and resources on how today's changemakers are leading with intention and creating meaningful environments that serve everyone. I also want to help you reimagine what your life could be if you had a constant view from the top of the mountain. I believe that in order to get there and stay there, you need to learn from those who have a constant and unobstructed view of nirvana. These are not just the usual suspects, but the ones that sit in the middle of the volcano as the lava explodes to the top of the mountain. They are the crazy ones who change the world, and they are the ones that I want you to meet. Are you ready? Let's go. This is the other thing, right? That a lot of people are scared to go into business that, you know, if I have a clear plan and I've got all the metrics and all the other pieces in place, but something that I just didn't anticipate doesn't go the right way. How do you problem solve something like that, Manan? I mean, what have you done that, you know, we can share with people out there who are scared of the point of perceived failure or the point where they need to kind of pivot the game a bit?
I think firstly, no matter how carefully thought out your plan is, it'll always go out the window once you actually start building out the business. And that is the number one thing that entrepreneurs should keep in mind, that nothing will go to plan. And that's like almost like an axiom that you can take as you start the company. The mindset that you need to have is a very fast kind of iterative mindset that, okay, we have a North Star that's clear to us. That's the, you know, that's the direction we need to head towards. We are in this, you know, vast sea, and that's the only thing that will help us navigate. So we always have to keep course correcting towards that direction. But on a day-to-day basis, everything will change, and very, very fast. You know, there's this famous saying in the startup world that building a startup is like jumping off a cliff and building a plane on the way down, which is actually true, by the way. You have to, every day you have to think what is not working. You have to iterate, and you have to realign and recalibrate towards the North Star. I think that is the mindset that any entrepreneur needs to have, which is like very fast iteration, very quick realignment towards the North Star, and problem solving on the way, you know, building a plane on the way down. If you are in the mindset that you'll lay out a perfect plan from day one and everything will go according to plan, that's not going to happen. So if you like certainty and if you like, you know, everything to be black and white, that's never going to pan out in a startup.
Absolutely. Yeah. These are such wise words, guys. I mean, so what I got out of what Manan just said there is that you know, your end goal, like your nirvana, you know, what you're promising is going to be where this company is headed. That being your North Star needs to stay, you know, very, very clear. But your journey towards that goal needs to be nimble, needs to be flexible, needs to be iteratable, right? And I think that's the key here, folks, is, you know, being very, very clear on what your company's vision and mission is, but then the road to getting there is something that you need to constantly keep working at to ensure that you don't lose sight of where you're going because you feel that the journey is taking you elsewhere. And I find that a lot of founders also make that mistake, Manan, is that they get so caught up in the process and the journey part of it, that they actually lose sight of where they were actually initially supposed to be headed.
Yeah.
So I feel like it's kind of like, stay focused on where that is, and all the other stuff from here to there is what can change and what should be allowed to change. Anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, I think as entrepreneurs, you need to have this unique ability to have a 30,000 feet point of view and a 3 feet point of view. And what I mean by that is, and one technique that, you know, that often helps here is, you know, every day or every few days, you must take time out and step back and reflect on whether your overall journey is headed in the right direction or not. Because on a day-to-day basis, an entrepreneur has this tendency to get lost in specifics, in the nitty-gritties of the business, right? It's entirely possible, as you said, that, you know, that you lose sight of the North Star. So it's just like any expert navigator, you every few days you reflect and you see, okay, are we still aligned to the North Star or not? And the North Star should be clear to not just you, but, you know, if you're building a team, then everyone in your team as well. So that everyone's work is adding up to the same direction. So absolutely, you know, you need to have both that high level point of view and that, you know, very, very close to the ground point of view, and you need to balance the two.
Absolutely. Incredible words right there. Guys, anyone that is planning on going into, you know, the world of startups, these are the types of things that you really want to sit and think about. And I feel it really is a mindset game at this stage. I feel that being a startup founder really requires you to constantly keep reevaluating, you know, what you're doing, why you're doing it, and where you're headed. And a big part of that is the mindset game that we have within ourselves. That needs to be very, very clear. And I think that's what Manan's saying here, that every few days, you got to kind of sit with that and make sure that everything is aligned with, you know, what it is that you're trying to accomplish. And if it's not, that's the time that you want to sit there and think, why not? So let me ask you this, Manan. In 2018, QMath went on a bit of a interesting journey. You launched an online class platform. What was the point of differentiation that made QMath's online teaching portal the choice for parents for their grade school kids? Like, can you share that?
Yeah, sure. So at the end of 2017, our teacher network had expanded quite a bit across India. And our curriculum had started becoming, you know, more and more widely known. And what we realized was that, you know, we were getting a lot of demand from parents for the QMath program from places where our teachers were not physically present. You know, for example, the smaller cities and towns in India, but also outside India, especially the US and Canada, and, you know, some European and APEC countries. So at that point, we decided, hey, you know, we have to enable our teachers to, you know, teach math, not just in their physical centers, but to kids anywhere across the world. And that's the point when we realized, okay, you know, the global ambition of QMath as a global brand, this is how we could do it, you know, by enabling our teachers to teach anywhere across the world. But one thing that I was very clear from day one was that we have to build a platform, an online platform that works exactly the same like our offline classes. You know, it's very easy to do online classes. You know, you just, for example, take a Zoom connection and, you know, the teacher and the student get connect over that, and then, you know, the teacher starts teaching. But in our classes, even in our offline classes and now in our online classes, the teaching approach is very different. You know, there's a specific reason we are called QMath. The word Q has a special meaning in it. It's basically how teachers teach. Their style of teaching is not about directly lecturing or telling the kid, you know, what the answer is, what the next step to do is. The teacher will always be giving the student hints and nudges and small cues, basically. But it will be the student who's expected to, you know, discover the final answer on their own. So we wanted to make sure that our online platform also kind of enables the same methodology of teaching that we were doing in our offline classes. So we started building this in 2018. And again, I took that approach of co-creation. I was the first teacher on this online platform as well. You know, as this was being built, I was running classes, and over the next, it took us almost 2 years to get it right. But by the end of 2019, I was confident that, you know, the platform works well and now we can start scaling it. And that's what we started doing. And then in the beginning of 2020 is when the COVID wave struck, you know, in March 12 to be precise in India. And back then, still, a lot of our business was offline classes and online was still just coming up. But at that point, we basically transitioned our entire user base, all our teachers, all our students across the world, across India and across the world, to the online platform. And since then, the online classes have been the model that we're running now.
Absolutely. It's the most scalable model, right?
Yeah.
So let's touch upon that a little bit before we move on, Manan.
Yeah.
In 2019, QMath grew to a staggering 5,000 tutors. So I want to ask you about that. A lot of people that go into, you know, founding a business fear the scale game. They fear, you know, how quickly or slowly should they be actually scaling. Now, QMath went within a matter of 4 short years from 100 tutors to 5,000. What do you feel people need to know in regards to scaling that you feel will help them get it right?
I think there's only one guardrail here, and which is that even as you're expanding, your unit economics have to work, which basically means that on every unit transaction on your platform, for Uber, it could be, it'll be the ride between the driver and the rider. For Airbnb, it'll be the booking of a property and so on, right? In our case, it's the class and so on. It's getting a student to take a class and so on. So for any business, if the unit economics are positive, which means that if X is the amount of money you pay to get a consumer and Y is the amount of money you get from the consumer over the time they spend on the platform, then Y should always be significantly larger than X. You know, output should always be significantly more than input. Otherwise, why are you running a business?
Right.
So if that is true, and if that continues to be true even as you scale, then you can scale at whatever pace the market allows. If the unit economics guardrails are in place, then generally faster scaling is better scaling, you know, because you tend to emerge as a market leader and other people follow you and venture capital follows you and so on. But if your unit economics are not working, and if you're spending more money on acquiring a consumer than you'll ever make on that consumer, then you need to go slower. You need to fix your product. You need to fix your acquisition channel, how you're acquiring your consumers. And then only after that do you start scaling again. So at different points in your journey, you have to hit the, you know, hit the brakes at some point and say, okay, you know, this is not working. This channel is not working. Okay, let's rework this and let's see what would be a more sustainable way to go.
Absolutely.
So unit economics positive is the absolute guardrails, but within that, if you can scale faster, you should scale faster.
That sounds great. There you got it. Right there, folks. You heard it from the master himself, who has done it in a very, very short span of time, but has done it very, very, you know, on purpose. And that's the other thing, right, guys? We keep going back to the same kind of structure. And if you look at the story of any successful founder, you'll see that their journey has been very similar to, you know, the journey that Manan has been on with QMath. I want to ask you this, Manan, because this is the other part that a lot of founders don't factor in, and that are kind of the changes to the infrastructure to support the scale, right? So with you having scaled pretty fast. What were some of the infrastructure changes that you needed to make in order to ensure that when you scaled at the rate that you did, that you were able to support that?
Yeah, I think it's almost like everything went through almost like a complete reiteration every year or so in our journey, you know, and this is something that you have to be prepared for. So when we started the scale journey, we were using very simple systems in terms of managing our consumers, like Excel sheets and so on. But as we started scaling, we had to bring in more automation. We had to bring in smarter ways of managing our consumers and our data. In the online platform, the order of magnitude change in complexity was far higher. We had to make sure that if there are, let's say, 20,000 students taking classes at the same time, then all AV connections are working properly. You know, so we had to expand our server capacities and bulk of these things. But as I said, this is again one of those things where it has to be an iterative process. So for example, for a new entrepreneur starting out today, you cannot start solving by thinking, okay, I'll hit this scale in 3 years. You have to solve for today. You have to make sure that today what your consumer needs is being met. And as the consumer base grows, you know, you keep reworking the infrastructure and making it more and more scalable. So this is again one of those things where constant recalibration towards, you know, the appropriate scale that you are at that point, and that is required.
Absolutely. So basically, the growth of the scale needs to be supported in growing also the infrastructure to support that, you know, and constantly reevaluating, you know, if if they are both kind of at par. I think that's kind of the thing that I'm getting from what you're saying here.
Exactly.
I want to touch upon a part of your company that we haven't talked about yet, and that is kind of the coding aspect of it. You launched coding in 2019, and I love the multi-revenue business model. I've always been a huge fan of that because I'm one of those founders that's way too scared to put all my ducks in one row. Like I always look at, okay, if this isn't going to get me where I need to, do I have two or three other things that can kind of pull me up so I can kind of get to where I need to? So I want to ask you this, why coding and why at this stage of your company's growth, which was 2019 that you kind of focused on this, why add a new thing when you've already got a good thing going, I guess is kind of the overarching question here.
Yeah. I think for us, the deeper reason was that we see coding as very connected to math. We see at the heart of coding is mathematical thinking. When you write a program, when you write an algorithm, it's all about the mathematical thinking behind it, how you're sequencing the steps, how you're ordering them and so on, right? So all good programmers are at their core mathematical thinkers. So we see coding not as different from math. In fact, our coding program has a very strong math component at its core, which is one of the reasons why our coding program is fairly different from, you know, other coding programs out there. So to give you a simple example, if you have to design a video game, a two-dimensional video game where, you know, you have to place, let's say, different tanks and battleships and so on. Now, each position, the position of each object on the screen is specified by two coordinates, you know, X and Y coordinates. That's a math concept. So doing such an activity helps the kid not only program, but also understand the math of coordinate geometry behind it. So we have a lot of these activities where kids program, but they use math concepts that sit at its core, right? And that not only helps them learn coding, but also helps them become better mathematical thinkers. So we think math, coding, and data science, this is the trinity, so to say, of the skills that us kids need the most at this point. So data science is also something we're actively exploring. And we will soon come out with a program where, you know, children learn data science on QMath.
Oh, that sounds incredible. You know, you're setting up the future leaders to be able to be self-sufficient in terms of, right? This is what I'm hearing right now because, you know, these are basic business requirements for anyone that is looking to go into business. Like you have to have a proof of concept. You need to understand how everything fits together. There needs to be the ability of knowing that somebody actually values what it is you're creating, that, you know, they would want to, you know, pay money for it. And then being able to kind of, you know, diversify what you're doing. I mean, you've gone from mathematics to coding, and now you're going into the data game too, which I absolutely love. And I kind of get why all these are connected, and it's great because to be able to come to one place where all of these dots, you know, someone's telling you how they connect, and that you can get it all in one place is really great because there's also this idea behind when you learn something, there's a culture associated with that learning process, is to be able to stay in one place and be able to learn, you know, multiple aspects of this journey, I feel is very, very powerful stuff.
And exactly.
And I want to ask you, like, you know, you already touched upon it, like, you know, when the pandemic hit, obviously, you know, going online and going full bore and going international just made sense because the demand obviously became so much more heightened. Beginning of this year, you went into your another round, you raised $40 million. I want to ask you, at this point, what were you looking to accomplish with that raise? Let's talk about that phase of things now.
Yeah. So one was clearly just expanding to more countries and building on a stronger brand in each country. So in the US, for example, you know, some investments were required just to open up our operations in more states and to make sure that we had the right kind of team to support those operations and so on. So one was that component. The other component was making sure that our curriculum, as we go to these, you know, dozens of countries around the world, while the core of math and the core of coding is the same across countries, but you still have different curriculum contexts. So, for example, in the US, you have Common Core in a majority of the states. And then some states like Texas have their own variations. In Canada, you know, some states will follow some specific curriculum guidelines. In the UK, it's GCSE. In Singapore, it's Singapore Math and so on. So we had to make sure that our curriculum had those local, you know, localization, so to say, or contextualization done before we started expanding to these countries. Mm-hmm. So one set of investments was that. I think the third set of investments was just to make sure that as we get an even wider variety of students on the platform, you know, so far before going international, we were still dealing with students in India. But when you open it up to international, to the international audience, you get students from even a wider variety, wider spectrum. And you have to make sure that your curriculum is personalized, has the ability to personalize and adapt to each student's unique needs at each point. And that requires significant deep technology work. You know, it requires adaptability, personalization, AI and ML tools that we have to make sure, you know, are part of the platform. So it's all these things put together. Because, you know, if you have the ambition to teach millions of students, you better have the ability to deliver in a million different ways. Otherwise, so it's a complex job.
Absolutely.
And then on top of it, you're dealing with this whole math phobia, right? You're dealing with this thing that, okay, math is a demon and math is not for me. And you have to convince first time students and first time parents that, no, there is a different way to learn math. There is a way to learn math where you'll just fall in love with it. And please come and at least try us. So yeah, it takes effort.
You know, I wish I had this when I was young, because the one subject that I always ran from was mathematics. And honestly, you know, because of the fear of just not understanding the concepts that were being taught one way for everyone. And I think that's the key takeaway here, folks, when it comes to QMath, is that although this is a very, you know, international, you know, company, they have a very individualistic approach and even a geocentric approach to ensuring that, you know, wherever you're at, whatever your ideology is, however you learn, that they have the way to help you move forward and move past a lot of the kind of traditional fears that we have about learning. I think that's the other thing I've really gotten out of this conversation with you, Manan, is that there are many different ways to learn something. And it looks like from our discussions that QMath is really kind of focused on making sure that they understand what those different ways are that people learn, and to kind of create more of a customization, even though this is a scale model. Fascinating.
It's you're trying to hit scale at one end, and then you're trying to solve for one person on the other side. So it's a very interesting problem to solve.
Absolutely.
I also think it's the holy grail of education that you can build a system that can adapt to each person's unique needs.
Agreed. I absolutely agree with everything that you just said there. So as we get ready to close out, I want to ask you, just so we can kind of round things up for everyone, what are the top five things that new founders need to know about how to build a scalable business out of a passion project?
Yeah, I think the first thing that I tell a lot of my, would-be entrepreneurs who ask this question is that it will take you the same amount of time and effort to build a $1 million business, a $10 million business, a $100 million business, or a $1 billion business. You will be spending the next few years of your life working on some idea. So choose a canvas that's as large as possible. Don't limit the problem space that you're solving. In our case, for example, we are aiming to win the $20 billion global math market. You know, that's ambitious, and that's a huge canvas that we're going after. So every new entrepreneur should think about this. The problem that they're solving, the solution, the product, the service they're building, does it have a large enough market or not? Will they be able to? Because if the idea is to build a scalable business, then the target market, better be as large as possible.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing is, as I said earlier in my conversation, that it won't be an easy journey. It'll have its share of ups and downs. So it better be an area that you're passionate about. You know, you're not jumping onto it just because there's this wave going on. So these days, for example, EdTech is very hot, you know, and there are lots of startups being created in the tech space. But you have to be really passionate about, the problem that you're solving, because every day you have to wake up and you have to kind of do the same thing, right? The third thing is to have that iterative mindset. No plan is perfect. You have to jump off a cliff and build a plane on the way down. And I think the fourth thing is just be very, very clear about business fundamentals. You know, so for example, there's a reason why MBA students get this better because they're actually trained for this. But even if you don't have an MBA, you have to take the effort to make sure you understand what is customer acquisition cost, what is, you know, lifetime value, what is churn, what are all these basic business fundamentals, you know, that will basically be the levers of your business. And I think the fifth thing is choose your team wisely and choose your team carefully. It's almost like you're going to be spend more time with them than with your own family as you build this startup. So you have to have fun and you have to enjoy doing it with them. So make sure that you're very choosy, very selective about the folks you work with. And yeah, if you do these basic things, you know, at least the journey will be fun. No one can guarantee a huge outcome, but at least the journey will be very exciting.
Absolutely. Manan, I want to ask you, any final words that you'd like to leave everyone with? Perhaps something that I haven't touched upon that you'd like people to know or you'd like to leave them with?
I think building a business is very exciting. And if someone does have a passion for something that, you know, that people will be willing to pay for, it's definitely worth a shot. You know, a lot of people don't take that risk because they hesitate, because they think, you know, they'll end up wasting 2-3 years of their life. But the upside is so huge of building a business of your own. The only way to get really wealthy is to own a piece of a business. So it's, you can never become truly wealthy with, you know, just selling your time. You have to build a business, or you have to own a part of a business. So, yeah, my final kind of thought would be, everyone should think about it seriously. It's not a necessity, but if you are passionate about something and if it is something that, you know, has a scalable kind of market, you should definitely consider building a business.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God. You said something there that I just want to make sure people heard. Don't sell your time, own your time. Guys, that is the statement that I want to leave all of you guys with. It's so powerful. And I think it's indicative of the journey that Manan has been on. I feel it's indicative of the journey of any successful founder is that they actually understand what that means. Manan, what an absolute pleasure chatting with you and having the opportunity to pick your brain.
Thanks, guys.
Absolutely. I want, you know, for anyone out there who wants to find out more about QMath and also wants to kind of follow you and see what you're all about, how can they get a hold of QMath? How can they get a hold of you?
They can definitely check out our website. While I'm not very active on Twitter, but I am active on LinkedIn, so they can connect on LinkedIn or, you know, just reach out and we'll definitely want to chat. And we are also active on all our social handles on Facebook, on Instagram, and so on.
Great.
And yeah, we have an app as well on the Play Store and App Store, which parents can download and get their kids to get started on the QMath way of practicing math. So yeah.
That's brilliant. So QMath on an app.
Yeah, QMath on an app. So it's a subset of the class experience, but it still gets you started with some basic stuff around math. So brilliant. That's something every parent. Check out.
I love everything about this. I genuinely wish you an abundance of continued success with QMath, Manan, and may its graduates go on to solve humanity's biggest problems. I really, really
Thank
hope.
Thank you, Raj. Thanks for the kind words and lovely chatting with you.
You too. Thank you so much for hanging out with Manan and myself today, folks. I really hope that you got some real value from our discussion and that you understand the importance of being calculated when planning out every stage of your growth, but also being very nimble and flexible and allowing yourself to fall in order to understand that, you know, that fall is kind of like helping you fall forward. And that's a whole other concept. It's a concept that a lot of people talk about, but really understanding that that is something that is going to be a part of your journey is important to really kind of be able to sit around. I feel that this also has a lot to do with this whole idea behind making sure that your mindset is on point. Throughout this discussion with Manan, what I kept coming back to as he was talking was just the mindset with which he has gone through the journey of scaling a passion into a very viable international opportunity to change the world. I really do believe that. So if there are anyone out there that would like to check out QMath and just follow Manan, you heard him tell you how to do that. If you would like to subscribe to any of the trainings that I do, go check out the Open Chess Confidence Academy on YouTube. The show is also on podcast platforms everywhere. And I also encourage you to go sign up for our free coaching newsletter at theopenchessconfidenceacademy.com/newsletter. I really, really want to continue my mission to support you on your professional journey, to give you the knowledge and the action tools from experts like Manan so that you can really move with confidence through your life to your intended purpose. I want to leave you with that, guys, and I can't wait to see you next week. Thank you so much for staying till the end. I really hope you enjoyed the show. Before you leave, I would love for your support by subscribing to my show and letting everyone you know about it and have them come take a listen. I would sincerely appreciate you joining me at LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. Search Raj Gurn and the Open Chess Confidence Academy. Until next week, I hope you continue to cultivate your own ecosystem so that everyone in and around it is empowered by your mission to elevate them all. See you next week.